Okay, but can we talk about the title card for a second?
Yeah.
Like, what were your initial thoughts when you saw this?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I wish that I'm able to think about things better in the moment than I do as a person. So I saw this and I was like, oh, interesting. Maybe the frog is actually a frog princess. Literally what I thought is that we're carrying the frog princess and like her storyline is about to truncate. And we're going to find a lot more out about her. Welcome to Death Watch, a serial watchcast about Disney Star Wars The Mandalorian. I'm Mike Bennett.
And I'm Chris Skull.
And today we'll be talking about Season 2, Episode 3, entitled Chapter 11, The Heiress. This episode was written by Jon Favreau and directed again by Bryce Dallas Howard.
So Bryce is back and she really knocks it out of the park with this episode. Yeah, we can also see how talented she is as a director, but we also get a glimpse of her father's influence in this episode as well.
Yeah, we talked a lot about her when she first directed The Sanctuary, but she's back again and she's just really doing a great job. Mm-hmm. So the episode starts with a recap of relevant points from the previous shows and episodes. We stress again that removing the helmet is not the way. We hear Pelly saying the covert is close by. Mando takes the frog to meet with her husband. No hyperdrive. It sets up this side adventure quest where they crash on the snow planet, we're lucky to get out of this frozen tomb alive. We get spiders on a plane, which is almost a Star Wars spinoff with
Jackson,
Jedi Master Samuel Jackson. they make it off the snow planet after extensive damage to the crest, and it limps into space. And so that's where we pick up this episode. So let's dive right in. We open with Houston, we have a problem situation. And I love this whole cold open. To me, it just felt like a mirroring of the Apollo 13 film, which for those of you who don't know, but Bryce Dallas Howard is Ron Howard's daughter, and he's the director of so many movies, but this instance of Apollo 13.
And if you only know Ron Howard from Happy Days, you have a lot to catch up on.
Yeah, you may have jumped the Mamacore. Is that jump the shark?
No, yeah, pretty deep. Much. Okay. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
We open with that scene we had from the trailer. The Razor Crest is just kind of limping. It's kind of comical how it's like kind of wobbling in space. I don't totally know how that works, but
I can almost hear it, like that old timey jalopy sound of a car just like sputtering along down the street.
Yeah. Listener Sammy Ryan pointed out this has the similarities to the ship, the main ship from the series Firefly, the Serenity, that it's kind of just like this epic ship that people view as junk, but we know that it's just this like relentless, it holds up to everything. So, and then we kind of pan to the planet ahead of us. Mando says we've made it, and just begins this descent to the planet. And because the engines are heavily damaged and we learn that he's low on fuel, this is not going to be what we typically see ships doing, where they just kind of land gently. He's going to have to break through the atmosphere, very similar to how we land when we bring ships back from space. It's awesome the way that it gets fully on fire, the way that the smoke is trailing behind it. It's just this meteor streaming towards the planet below.
Yeah, this is that homage to the Apollo 13, when the capsule comes and is re-entering the orbit of Earth, and there's just heat coming off from the belly of the ship. We see that happening with the crest again.
Yeah, well, and it makes you wonder too what this type of metal is, because our spaceships have like a special heat shield on the bottom, which is made out of like ceramic tiles and other like heat resistant materials that won't burn up. The Razor Crest handles it. And we get another nod to the word dank ferric, which
I think we should start using that in our daily nomenclature.
I know, that'll be our next t-shirt.
Dank ferric.
Yeah. So they're going down. Mando calls for the Frog Lady. She asks for his assistant or her assistants, you know, pull back on this lever and keep us, you know, nose up, or more importantly, belly down. And then we start to see the port of Trask, we assume, is where we were told to go by Peli. Below, it starts to become clearer and clearer because we are rapidly falling towards the planet's surface. And we key in on a Mon Calamari dock worker who's like wearing a traditional Cape Cod like knitted sweater that like my grandma could have made. It's like almost breaks the fourth wall of the show because it just doesn't look like a Star Wars sweat, like something from this universe. It looks like it's from Earth. Like I feel like I know someone who owns that sweater. But he's like, this Mon Calamari guy is just kind of staring up almost like judgmentally at this crater slant, like hurtling towards his town.
I love the fact that he's not freaking out, almost like this is like the second time this has happened this week already. He's like, yeah, great, not another one, man.
Yeah, here it comes. And we also get cuts in from the radio tower from the port, who keeps telling him like, Razorcrest, you need to slow down. And Mando is apparently waiting for the perfect moment to break the suspense. He gets through the clouds, gets super close, and then he yells out dramatically. Now it activates his reverse thrusters, which breaks his descent velocity. He kind of hovers very gently above the landing dock where he seems to have been assigned. You kind of get a little glimpse of his dashboard and what the landing like assistance looks like, and he's hovering nice and easy, getting ready to go to land, and then his right engine blows. He falls to the right, and like what we have kind of seen now is that these docks are just kind of out. They're literally like our docks for ships on the ocean. They're out in the water, and so because he gets blasted to the side, he misses the dock and falls straight into the water and
just cuts, dunks.
Yeah, cuts straight to the title card.
Okay, but can we talk about the title card for a second?
Yeah.
Like, what were your initial thoughts when you saw this?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I wish that I'm able to think about things better in the moment than I do as a person. So I saw this and I was like, oh, interesting. Maybe the frog is actually a frog princess. Literally what I thought is that we're carrying the frog princess, and like her storyline is about to, you know, truncate, and we're going to find a lot more out about her.
So we're going to get like the weirdest Disney princess crossover.
Totally.
That's it. That's the meme right there. This is a new Disney princess.
Yeah, we're going to learn that Bo-Katan is a frog and she needs to kiss Prince Charming to become a Mandalorian again. I did not pick up on what in retrospect seems like a very obvious nod to the content of the episode. We did talk in our first edition of the Before After show last week that on Thursday that Katie Sackhoff had announced, or she had tweeted something cryptic like, is it Friday yet? And that kind of keyed us into the thought that
she immediately took it down.
Yeah.
That's what made it even more suspicious.
Yeah. I was primed for her to be in this episode, and I still didn't catch it. So yeah, I assume you are not as thick headed as me.
Nah. Sorry to say. I did. I remember Chrissy and I, when we saw the episode, we just immediately looked at each other, and my thought didn't go immediately to Bo-Katan. Like, I also had a feeling that she was going to be involved, but I thought it was going to be Sabine, that we were going to see an appearance from Sabine Wren, because she is next in line, and there were, you know, there were conversations about her taking also the handle of Mandalore. But then I had to rewatch and relook at those episodes from Rebels, where Sabine was the one who had the Darksaber last, which meant that she was next in line for Mandalore. So this is going to be, if you're watching this episode, the spoilers already have been out there for a while. So we know when she comes in play. We don't know when she comes in play yet.
Well, we had kind of theorized that perhaps she was in the show as a flashback, because we know Moff Gideon has the Darksaber, and typically the Darksaber changes hands only through fight to the death combat. So it's possible we thought that maybe
she was already gone.
Bo-Katan was killed, and we might learn about her through a flashback when they meet Ahsoka or something like that. But it's awesome to see her make it. She is with us. You know, she started in the Clone Wars. She was in Rebels, obviously, and now she's here in live action. So it was great. When we come back from the title card, we see what I think is maybe a modified AT-AT.
I think it's confirmed that it is. The legs give it away.
Yeah, and this honestly is like the appropriate use of AT-AT walkers. Mm-hmm. They get heavily criticized for their military weaknesses. We see them on Hoth. They get tripped up pretty easily, and you know they have a lot of firepower, but they have a lot of weaknesses as well. To anything other than troopers on foot. If you have any kind of ship, you can probably take out an AT-AT. But they have figured out how to use them here as tow trucks.
One of the most formidable like armored vehicles in the Star Wars universe, and it gets taken down with pieces of rope.
Yeah. Well, and yep. I think what's interesting, Chris and I met living in Miami, and I have lived on the East Coast my whole life. If you ever go to port areas, the large cranes that lift mm-hmm. off the containers from container ships, they look, honestly, a lot like this. They're like kind of, they don't move in terms of walking, but they're kind of four-legged with like a body that lifts off the crane that goes over the ship. They kind of have some kind of similarity to this thing here. So I thought
personally,
it was pretty cool.
I think these cranes from now on need to look like these modified AT-ATs. That to me would make the mobile cranes would totally change the construction game.
That'd be cool. So Mando gets off the ship after it gets plopped aggressively onto the landing dock. And in like water's kind of like spewing out of the engine and other places. It's covered in seaweed. It's adding insult to injury to the state of the Razor Crest. But as Mando gets off, he walks up to our sweatered Mon Calamari dock worker.
So, how can I help you?
Can you fix it?
And this guy is like, he has like a weird tone of voice. The way he talks is kind of funny.
Fix it. I can make it fly.
Do what you can.
Mando gives him 1,000 credits. And as he walks away, he's like, oh,
fuel it up.
That's like saying, like, I just wrecked my car. I don't even know if it's going to drive anymore. And the mechanic's like, yeah, I'll just add some fuel.
I'll just
add some gas and you'll be on your way.
Yep. Then Mando's followed by the frog lady who begins to call for her husband. This is a very one of the few positive romantic moments in the Star Wars universe. they are kind of like relationship goals, this couple. She's calling for him. He kind of runs around the corner and they see each other and run into each other's arms.
Cue happy frog squeals.
Yeah. I'm sure the child is sad to see his eggs leave. Mando realizes he's hungry, so he's like, let's go find some place to eat.
Can you appreciate the fact that he knows that he's hungry because he's looking admiringly at the eggs?
Yeah.
As you're being reunited with your father.
He's got to be learning how to take care of the child a little bit better. So they head to the nearby, what would you call this? Like an inn. It's not really a cantina. And they sit down. Mando's like, nah. A Mon Calamari guy comes over to serve them. Mando orders a bowl of chowder or as they say where I'm from, chowder. But they order food. Mando's like, I'm not going to eat, obviously, because we know he doesn't take his helmet off, which offends this Mon Calamari who's like, seats are spare here. And Mando's like, I'll pay for my seat. I'm not going to eat here. We see another appearance of the Calamari Flan that Mando got paid in the first episode when he brings back the mithril and slaps it on the table and he asks for information about others who look like me. He seems to know what he's talking about. He's like, I can get someone for you. I'll be right back. While he heads off to talk to someone, the child is looking at his bowl of soup, which It's really weird even how it's served. Like, it wasn't, he didn't go back to the kitchen, bring a bowl. He pulled like a shop vac hose and just like squirted a bowl full of chowder.
Whatever that was.
Ugh. Yeah. And then as the child is kind of looking at it, we see it kind of move. And then like a giant like squid just jumps out and suctions his whole face. It's hilarious.
This is the second alien reference in two episodes. You got the alien eggs in the previous one and then the face hugger in this one. Totally. I kind of noticed another detail. I mentioned this in the last podcast. We hear the child actually make a coherent sound or word of some kind when he's looking initially at the frog eggs and he says like batu. He says the same thing again when he's looking at the bowl of chowder when it's moving. He's like, he looks at it and he goes, batru. I have a feeling in his head it means food.
Interesting.
I don't know. That's just my theory.
Yeah, I buy it.
But not that
Mando
chowder,
pulls
though.
Mando pulls out his little vibro blade and he doesn't seem to like hit.
He just taps
the
it.
Squid. Yeah, or tap. Yeah, and it just kind of like releases and falls, and then the child's gonna eat it, of course.
Don't play with your food.
The Mon Calamari brings a Quarren over here. And, you know, this whole time I haven't put this information together that we are on the planet Mon Calamari. I know we were only seeing Mon Calamari people and Quarren people.
I don't think we are. I think we're on another planet. It's a dock, and both the Mon Cala and the Quarren people, they live on a planet that's just one big ocean. So oceans are their thing.
We may be preparing for errors and omissions next week. I feel like this is Mon Calamari, and that's why everyone here are these two people. But we'll see. I don't know if we can find that out. But in any case, the Mon Calamari brings over a Quarren who's like, I can take you to where I've seen Mandalorians, no problem. And from day one, this guy is sus.
Like, yeah, for real.
We don't like him. And then so we cut the next scene is on the Black Pearl. This guy's little like fishing trawler. They're heading out to sea. And he starts this little sequence of like, why don't you come over here and watch me feed this thing? And is like, we're just like, dude, he doesn't care. Like, we don't. Just leave us alone. It's like, no, but the kid's going to want to see it. You know, come on over. So Mando's like, fine. And then they get up near there's this large tank in the center of the ship, and they're going to feed what he calls a mamacore. And I haven't seen this creature before. I had to name check it because I thought he initially said a mamacore, like a Quarren. Mm-hmm. But that's
like,
not
we're
the
just going to, we're going to feed Big Mama.
Yeah, like this is my mother, or maybe like whatever. But it's a Mama Core, which looks more like a Sarlacc monster that lives in the ocean. But as they walk over to the edge of this tank, Mando even says like, "That's close enough." Which is, you know, we've gotten pretty good at picking up on the foreboding things that come up in the show. As they're standing there, they drop like some fish in the center, and then this Quarren just turns around with his baton and slaps the pram right into the water. And as he's Mando flinches, and as like he's getting ready to handle it, this huge monster with like, honestly, the mouth of it looked a little similar to how the spider looked in the previous episode with like the mm-hmm. multiple layers of teeth and things, but it's obviously much larger. It has octopus squid like hands. It just comes up and entirely swallows the pram. Just before it does, you see the child reach over and tap his little enclosure button. So at least he's sealed in there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This kind of felt like payback for the child eating all the eggs in the previous episode. now this mamacore is eating his egg. But in any case, he's swallowed whole. Mando jumps in, like dives in to try to get him. And as soon as he does, the other Quarren on the ship roll over a giant like metal grate enclosure over top of it. And Mando comes back up for air and they start just like jabbing at him with spears and weapons to try to take him out. We hear one of them say like, all right, like they're kind of laughing ominously. His armor is gonna, his best car is going to be ours. They've clearly just arranged this whole thing to try to get his armor. Which is an echo of what the armorer said earlier on in episode 3 when Mando gets his new best car armor, that it will attract attention.
Yeah, attract many eyes.
Yep. So as he's in there, you know, it starts to get a little like panicky as a viewer. You're like, because he's kind of like not able to breathe super well because he keeps having to dunk under and come back up for air, but he's getting stabbed at, and we know there's a giant monster in the water below him. And then, like, as all this is happening, a Mandalorian drops in on their jetpack, takes out the pistol, and so we don't see much of them in this like 1 second shot, but the pistol is super clearly a Death Watch pistol, or more importantly, it's Bo-Katan's pistol. We saw her using in the previous animated shows, and then two others back her up, but they take out the 8 or 9 of the Quarren who are on the ship. It's a pretty interesting sequence. So the three who we have here, they're named as, you know, Bo-Katan Kryze, who's played by Katie Sackhoff, who played the animated version of her in the shows. Koska Reeves, who's played by Sasha Banks, the wrestler who we knew was going to be on and theorized who she might be.
Yeah, she was the hooded figure that we saw both in the trailer and in this episode in the dock for a split second. She's
the hooded woman. And then the third is Axe Wolves, not exactly sure how to pronounce it, played by Simon Cassianitis. And what I've heard is Axe Wolves is actually a name that George Lucas created while he was on set one day with Dave and John, that character himself, he's the one who named it, which is pretty cool. But as they're fighting, there's this one move that Sasha Banks' character has when she like goes to do like a fully committed like kick in the air, and then her jetpack engages to help like turn her back like onto her feet. So it's like normally like a kick where if you or I did it, we would land up on the ground, like on our side, because she fully committed to it. But the jetpack rights her so she lands on her feet.
That's a pretty cool move.
It's cool to see, like, you know, the armorer again, when she gave the jetpack to Mando, talked about how it will learn to know him. And we get the sense that it's a little bit like there's some kind of connection directly to the brain, and it does things, you know, that you want
intuitively.
Intuitively. So they rescue Mando, and we get this cool scene, which is, did you catch the like the mirror of the scene to the flashbacks?
Mm-hmm. Oh man, yeah. First the flashback of him when he's first rescued by Death Watch when he was a foundling.
Yep.
And there was the more, well, yeah, actually, yeah, that was
that's the main one I was talking about. Mm-hmm. That when the other Death Watch guy reached his hand down to pick up the child Mando, Kid Din, as we used to call him, the way Bo-Katan gives his hand to Din Djarin now, she's like, give me your hand, I'll pull you up. It's like I feel it had to be the same framing of the shot.
Mm-hmm.
And as she pulls him out, he's obviously, you know, he has to catch his breath, but he's like, you got to save the child. Or no, he says the foundling, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got to save the foundling. And like, without even thinking, Sasha Banks just turns, she's like, got it, and dives right in. Mm-hmm. Which just like, you know, we know Death Watch are incredible warriors, Mandalorians in general, but and we've seen Mando do it, you know, week after week, but the way that they just don't think about the, like, how intense of a battle it might be, they just jump right in. And she's in the water, we see a few blaster shots, and then she comes flying out with kind of bent up pram, but she pulls off one of the panels and there's the child inside. And one thing I was thinking about, this pram was fabricated by Queel,
mm-hmm.
and has now been damaged. I don't know if it's going to be salvageable, but it's kind of like the last vestige of Queel's impact on the child's life at this point.
Why do you got to do that to me, man?
I know. Hopefully.
Why do you got to do that?
No, hopefully we get to repair it. Mando has a lot of things he needs to repair.
Yeah.
So we should talk a minute about Bo-Katan, you know, from Lord of the Sword, The Return of the Queen.
I understood that reference.
Yeah. I'm going to hammer you with Lord of the Rings references until you read the books.
Appreciate it.
And you know what's interesting? No one, like a few of you are going to care. Chris doesn't care. But this actually does feel like the story of Aragorn and how he's a, let's see. He is
an heir
in exile. Right? Yeah, an heir in exile with a sword that he needs to get to unite his people against an enemy, which is exactly what Bo-Katan's situation is. She's an heir in exile, needing to get a sword so that she can lead her people. So,
you know. So that I can understand the character more. Aragorn, isn't he sort of reluctant to do it? Also, is he kind of like, I will help you, but literally anybody else should lead except me?
Well, his line of kings was corrupted by the power of the ring, and so he sees himself as corruptible to that power, and so he doesn't want it because he does not want to be corrupted and lead his people poorly, and so mm-hmm. because of that, he just doesn't want to try at all.
Okay, so on that note, I know we're going to discuss it a little bit more as the episode goes along, but I see a lot of parallels between Aragorn and Bo-Katan Kryze, specifically on that point.
Yeah.
Because you'll catch in this episode how, you know, she wants to unite Mandalore, but she doesn't directly say that she's the one to unite Mandalore.
Right. And then she also, well, I think she also kind of alludes to the fact that she is the one. I think it's still this tension of like, she knows it needs to happen. She probably knows deep down that she's the one to do it, but I think she's also hesitant to be
do
the
it.
One who has to lead. So yeah.
Yeah.
So why don't we talk a little bit about who Bo-Katan is for those who are not watching Clone Wars and Rebels on repeat like you and I might be.
Yeah, she first of all, the markings on her helmet are very telling. She was actually it's representative of the Night Owl, which is a symbol in the Mandalorian culture. She was a leader of a group called the Night Owls, which was an all-female Mandalorian, squadron. She was also lieutenant in Death Watch, which at the time was considered a terrorist group. Mm-hmm. But during the Clone Wars, her sister, Satine, was the Duchess of Mandalore and the on-again, off-again of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
But we see a lot of her in the Clone Wars series. Satine was the pacifist. She was the diplomatic one.
It's important to note that the Mandalorians as a people had made an attempt to move away from their warrior past and embrace pacifism, like total pacifism, no weapons at all. And that's what bore the beginning of Death Watch as like a terrorist group, because it was people who were committed to the old ways of Mandalore in combat. And so that's kind of where their family has a rift between the old and the new,
right?
The peaceful and the combat.
Yeah, Bo-Katan, deep down, she believed that they needed to go back to their more militaristic ways. But unfortunately, that also drew her in the wrong circles, which included corrupt governor Pre Vizsla, but then even around the circles of
Darth Maul.
Darth Maul.
Yeah.
He and his brother ended up in Mandalore and started wreaking havoc, not by themselves, but actually recruiting and even leading by taking over the rulership of Mandalore. But at that point...
Yeah, and that's where the significance of the mm-hmm. Darksaber, particularly to this moment, is kind of explained more as the leader of the Mandalorian people is... Or at least of the warrior clan of the Mandalorian people and its history, was the possessor of the Darksaber. So, you know, like you said, Bo-Katan was following Pre Vizsla, who was the leader of Death Watch. Eventually, Darth Maul kills him, so Darth Maul becomes the leader of Mandalore. Mm-hmm. It moves on down the line, eventually gets into Sabine Wren's hands and then back to Bo-Katan by the end of Rebels. And now Moff Gideon holds it. So there's this, that's why it's so significant that Moff Gideon has it, because it represents the leadership of the Mandalorian people.
The biggest question is, how did he get it, and why is she still alive? And those are the questions we don't know. That hopefully this series of episodes will reveal to us. But if you haven't already, we highly recommend the Mandalorian arcs, both in the Clone Wars and the Rebels.
We should post a short list of like what are the whatever it is the 10 or 12 of the meatiest Mandalorian episodes from those series that you can
pay for attention to. Definitely from the Rebels series and the last season, I think the last three or four episodes of the last season of Clone Wars.
So back to the show, the three of the Mandalorians who rescued Mando are there. They begin to talk. Mando tells him, I've been looking for more of my kind. I'm on a quest. I need help. And as he's saying that, they take off their helmets, totally normal, like we've seen her and the other members of Death Watch do in the animated series. And again, it stops Mando in his tracks. And he's like, where did you get that armor? And the same way he addressed Cobb Vanth when he took off the helmet on Tatooine. She's like, bro, this armor's been in my family for generations. Like, you can step off of it. and he's like, but Mandalorians don't take off their helmets.
And you can just feel the eye rolls when he says that.
Yeah, and they look at each other. And then our man, Axe Wolves, is like,
he's one of them.
Dank Ferrick.
One of what?
We get another name check of Dank Ferrick from Bo-Katan. I feel like it has like a multi-use term.
Yes, sort of like another four-letter word that we're aware of.
Yeah, I was going to say, you and I are not necessarily big users of those words, but they get used in many different ways. that's kind of what I think is happening here. So he says he's one of them, and Bo-Katan continues to tell Mando who he is, which is sort of kind of interesting. Like, let me tell you who you are, because you obviously have no idea.
And you are a child of the Watch.
The Watch.
From now on, we will be calling all of you listeners of this podcast children of the Watch.
This is the way.
You're welcome. This is the way. Children of the Watch were a group of religious zealots who broke away from, you know, presumably Death Watch, but from the rest of the Mandalorian people to reestablish the ancient way of the Mandalore. And so this kind of confirms your and I theory that because we learned that he doesn't take his helmet off, and that this group, this covert that Mando was a part of, is a breakaway, non-consistent group with the rest of the Mandalorian people, which is why he seems so different than a lot of the ones that we've known, which was like kind of like mind-blowing, but not surprising.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear it out of Bo-Katan's mouth was cool.
And his response to all that revelation.
There is only one way, the way of the Mandalore.
Kind of just and solidifies. He pieces out. Yeah. 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 He's like, by the way, you guys are wrong. I'm right. And then he just dips, rocket boosts away.
Yeah. So it's just like, it's this really deep moment of revelation that you are not part of like the average Mandalorian people. You are in an extreme group. But as Mando points out, you're in an extremist group who is dedicated to like the ancient ways. So, you know, I don't want to get too far into the difference between, you know, mainstream groups and extremist groups within them, but and which one is more valid than the other. But it's just interesting that, you know, he's not talking about being part of like a different belief system. He's just talking about being more traditional than the current, you know, group of people. Does that make sense?
It kind of does. They're going to have to try to find a way to piecemeal their situation, which hopefully Mando does. He knows that he's been looking for fellow Mandalorians all this time. It's going to be tough for him to come all this way to not at least get some allies out of this situation.
Totally. So he heads back to Trask, and as he's walking back, presumably to his ship or somewhere, he gets surrounded by a gang of Quarren who they conveniently waited until he walked into a well-lit area near some pallets so that, you know, we could get some good shot in here.
A lot of great cover yeah. Invisibility. How very...
Definitely one of those Quarren was a director because he knew how to frame this shot.
He's got one of those like light meters. He's like, wait, hold on, guys. Yeah. Wait, hold on. No. Yeah, we got, this is at least five lumens. We need minimum 10. Let's move a few feet this way.
I could see one in the back holding the parabolic mic. He's like, oh, I got to mic this hit.
Yeah,
on the sidelines of an NFL game.
No, there's too many crates, too many boxes and pallets over here. Let's move that out of the way to get a better camera shot for the Mandalorian to show up.
Yeah, and then eventually just like, no, we'll just green screen this whole thing. Don't worry about it. So they surround him and they're like, look, you killed my brother, is actually what he says. And Mando, not wanting to be one to argue, is like, all right, fine, I'll just kill all of you. And right before that happens, our three-part harmony drop in from their jetpacks, and Bo-Katan steps in. She's like, I'm the one who killed your brother. And then they, in 4 seconds, take out all of the Corran. It's over immediately. There's no suspense after that moment. And she's like, can I at least buy you a drink? Obviously wanting to try to get some resolution here. So they go back to, I guess, the inn to drink more.
Which presumably has a lot less Corran in it now.
Presumably less, yeah. I'm not sure what the population of this town is, but it's already like 30 people lighter than it was yesterday. And we kind of just pick back up and get more information about, like, basically filling in the gaps from where the Rebels series ended and how we got to here. Bo-Katan tells Mando why they're here is to reclaim weapons that were taken from Mandalore, that Trask is being used as like a black market port, and that's why they're here. They're being loaded onto a freighter for the Imperial. I feel like I can't even call them the Empire anymore, because they're really not an Empire. They're just Imperials.
Yeah, they're just remnants. I think there's probably an official name for them, but they're definitely not Empire. They're just Imperial leftovers. And yeah. Gideon is in the sector. He's, I guess, the leader of the sector.
It could be. So, she says that our goal here is to seat a new Mandalore on the throne.
Can we at least buy you a drink?
What we are trying to do is reunite the Mandalorian people, reclaim our planet.
They're staging weapons that have been bought and sold with the plunderers of our planet.
There's this interesting line that Mando's like, but the planet is unlivable.
Once we've done that,
but Bo-Katan doesn't seem to. What she says is don't believe everything you hear.
Anyone who goes there dies.
There's this like,
once the Empire knew they couldn't control it, they made sure no one else could either.
Obviously, Mando's sect of the Mandalorians has been taken out, like they've been away from the group. So maybe they don't know what the planet is like, or maybe it's like what we've seen so many times before, just, you know, Imperial misspreading of information.
Propaganda.
But Bo-Katan's like, don't believe everything you hear, and continues on.
Our enemies want to separate us, but Mandalorians are stronger together.
Which, you know, makes sense from the Empire standpoint. The more you can keep the Mandalorians separated, the easier they will be to take out.
To subdue.
There's, you know, we're not a political podcast. It's hard to not see some parallels to, like, what is a common string in, like, current politics in America too. This like separating groups and dividing and conquer. It's, you know, this pretty cyclical thing in history, but it's it seems pretty obvious here.
How's the line go? A house divided cannot stand.
Yeah, that's
so. I think the Empire has done that in its history, specifically with the Mandalorians.
Yep. And then she's like, "Look, so Mando tells him I'm looking for a Jedi. She says I can lead you to a Jedi, but first you need to help us with our mission." So he agrees. They go to plan out the attack. They're kind of laying on the hood of Mando's car, looking at the stars in the sky, which is kind of funny. And you can see the Imperial Gazanti freighter in the background. I think we've seen these like all over. They're not Star Destroyers, obviously, but they are a pretty common Imperial freighter. They first show up, I think, in Episode 1. You can see one in the background of a Tatooine scene. But they are used all over. It was a pretty common ship to be made anyway. I think a lot of the crime syndicates use them as well. So there's a number of variants for this ship, but
it doesn't have like, I think, obvious Imperial markings. So they probably just confiscated it or repurposed it. And then staffed it with Imperial officers.
Could be. So it's laying out there. It's full of the weapons that they're trying to get back. And their plan is, as it's leaving, it has to kind of taxi down the runway. It can't go fast. You know, you don't want, if you're boaters,
especially in Florida, you don't want to, no wake for manatees. So yes. I imagine there's some space manatees, space manticores in there. You don't want to bother them.
Oh, the space manatees are the pergill, the pergill from.
That's right.
Anyway, getting too deep. But their plan is, as it has to go slowly out of the port, it's going to be like kind of hovering for a while, and at that point it will be vulnerable to attack. We're going to use our jetpacks to fly in and take out any of the troopers on board and get our stuff back. Mando asks how many there are. She says no more than a squad.
Didn't Greef Karga say something similar back when they had to try to reclaim Navarro? They were like, oh, it's just, you know, he's got four guys on him. And then the moment they show up, there's like 400.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I meant four in the room, but there's 400 all over the town. And then even Axe is like, troopers can't hit the side of a Bantha, which back to original trilogy, ripping on how poorly the troopers can shoot.
It wasn't a stormtrooper.
Yeah. That's good. So, and before they can do this, Mando goes to drop off the child with the frog family. And he's like, I've got to go do something. Something's come up. Can you watch him for me? And I like am still feeling PTSD from him eating all of the eggs from the last episode. And I'm like, oh no. Like, I thought we got away from this. Please do not eat any more eggs. And even it zooms in on the shot of the child up against the tank. We see the eggs floating around, but then one like moves and then out pops a tadpole.
Little baby tadpole. Oh, yeah. Cute. I think I saw a meme that said that the most unrealistic aspect of the Mandalorian is how easy it is for Mando to get a babysitter.
Yeah, for real. It's like flying all over the galaxy, just dropping his kid off with all these people.
Watch the child. I'm going to go find a babysitter. Okay. I don't know who you are, but whatever. Yeah. Do you, man.
Well, while Mando and his friends get ready to attack, why don't we take a quick break and give you a chance to hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
This episode of Death Watch is also brought to you by Skull Square Design Company. We're also huge fans of The Mandalorian, as well as Star Wars in general. And we wanted to share that love by making gifts for our fellow fans of Mando and the Child. Whether you wanted some flair while enjoying your favorite beverage in Oga's Cantina, or wanted to covertly show your support to the Resistance while exploring Batuu, we've got gifts for everybody. And not just Star Wars fans, but Marvel and Disney fans too. Check us out at skullsquared.com or follow us on social media at skullsquared. That's skull with a C, as in,
see y'all real soon!
And we're back. So we are moving forward with the assault on the freighter. Get this cool like heist music, right?
It really got me amped up for it.
Yeah. The cruiser starts to crawl away from the port. And just like they described, it's an interesting shot. We're looking at the large ship in front of us, and we're kind of looking into the heat exhaust from the engines firing up. And then overhead, over us, kind of like the Blue Angels.
I was thinking about that, yeah.
Yeah, they kind of flies over. You see their exhaust trails heading towards the ship. And then they land on like this catwalk that's on the outside of the hull of the ship. And there's a couple troopers out there. And as soon as they land, a few more pop out. And one jams the comms and he's like, we're under attack by pirates. And so that kind of sets off the blaring alarms on the ship. The few of them take out these troopers and they get inside the corridor within, take out more, you know. I love how, you know, it's in all sci-fi, but these ships are designed with huge bulkheads, which resist like the pressure of the vacuum of space, but they lend themselves so well to like shootouts where you can just move up the hallway in 10-foot increments and get perfect cover for the shape of your body.
It's almost like their version of the building code for ships has to include for firefights. It's right. just part of like, you know, you're going to get, just in case pirates show up, give some cover for yourself. Give yourself
minimum
a chance.
18 inch blaster clearance. Yeah.
ADA accessibility for blaster fire.
Yeah. So they're just taking them out. One of the troopers like calls it in up to the main deck or the cockpit. And they're like, how many are there? They're like, there's at least 10, maybe more. Like you can tell they're just causing so much havoc that these Imperials are not organized. So they're moving forward through the ship. The pilot starts to get nervous. And, you know, I there was this interesting moment that, you know, we see the Imperial underlings being like really timid about speaking against their captains, their superior officers. So he's like, you know, we're stuck here. We can't go any higher until we get out of the port area. He's just like, you climb now. Like,
do
screw
it.
Yeah. We're not going to deal with this. So
yeah, I kind of feel like this is like the pilot's first day on the job.
Yeah. You know, and I feel like I like this guy, but
I hope he goes well in his career.
Yeah. It doesn't go super well for him. So he starts to climb and then, they start heading further down a hallway. Mando throws like a smoke grenade, which then they all turn on their inspector gadget, heat vision helmets and take them out. We get, introduced to a deck officer played by Kevin Dorff, who is like, this guy is not combat trained. And I think it also is an example of how poorly organized these Imperials are at this point. They can't be recruiting anybody. I don't even know. I'm unclear as to why there even is, you know, an organized group of them. But the captain from the cockpit is like, you need to hold them there. And he's like, yes, sir. And he's like, all right, guys, let's attack. And then like immediately is like, close the door.
You're like, the first sign of a firefight, like, what do you think was going to happen? He's like, okay, hide, close it up.
Yeah. And they're like, which one, sir? He's like, close them all. Just do it. And they're like pounding the control panel. A bunch of the bulkhead doors close and he radios back to the cockpit. And I've loved the comedy in The Mandalorian so far because it's not over the top. And it's even some of the slapstick stuff is still like well done. But he's like, sir, we've trapped them. And he's like, where have you trapped them? He's like, we trapped them in the cargo control. Area control room. He's like, and then like the captain stares down for a moment.
You can see the wheels spinning in his head. He's like, so let me get this straight.
He's like, wait, what did you say?
You locked them in the cargo control area with the cargo controls, which include the cargo room. Which
where
is the
you
room
are
that,
standing.
Where you are standing. Yes. Okay.
You backed yourself up against the huge opening in the side of the ship and then handed the controls to the pirates.
To the enemy.
Yeah. He's like, so wait, where did you hide them again? He's like halfway through saying, well, we've locked them in the, and then they open the door and they all get sucked out the back of the ship. And I was thinking they are still over water probably, but I'm now realizing they've been climbing for a minute or so at this point. So that's a couple
They'll
thousand
be fine.
Foot drop. I'm sure he's fine.
Yeah, I'm sure they're fine.
The stormtroopers are wearing plastic armor, so they're good to go. Mm-hmm. That'll take that impact, no problem.
Yeah.
So at this point, we have taken the ship with our group, and I love this. Like, so Bo-Katan grabs one of, and it looked like to me it was the same kind of communicator that C-3PO had.
Yeah, on, the little lipstick tube.
Yeah, white lipstick. I would love to know what that thing was.
I would imagine it was an actual lipstick tube and they just glued another microphone-looking cap on top of it.
Yeah, she's holding it. She checks in. It's good to see that after this long, they still haven't found a new way of communicating and they still use lipstick. but she just radios back because the one pilot who's been timid is like, come in, are you there? And then a few seconds later, Bo-Katan comes on the radio. She's like,
put some tea on. We'll be up in a minute.
It's kind of an epic little retort from her. And then this pause gives her and Mando a chance to talk again. Because when she says, there's this like exchange, right? At this point where she's, the captain is like, even if you can eject some of these like crates and take some of this stuff back. We're going to search the planet and we're going to get it back anyway. So, you know, you're not going anywhere. And she's like, oh, we're not going to eject any of these canisters. We're taking the whole ship. So put some tea on. We'll be there in a minute. And Mando's like, wait, that's not the deal. You asked for help to get the weapons. I'm not helping you steal this whole freighter. And this is where there seems to be like a rift in at least the code of Mando's, like Mandalorian code of honor, and Bo-Katan's code of doing anything to achieve the goal, no matter what. So there's this, the line that she says to Mando is like, there is something I need. And like the way she says it and the like pacing of it sounds like the same way that Moff Gideon in chapter 8 yells out to them when they're stuck in the cantina. They're like, you have something I want. It's the same kind of tone. Mm-hmm. And so to me, I feel like there's a mirroring there of kind of the sinister nature of Gideon almost being a little bit echoed within Bo-Katan. And, you know, she's just like, look, we need to do this because I need that thing to rule Mandalore. I'm changing the deal. And, you know,
I think that's where another parallel is the intentions of Gideon too, where, like you said, she's willing to do what it takes to get what she wants. And right. I feel like even Gideon, because we're on the side of the audience and he's on the side of the Empire, we know he's a bad guy.
Yeah.
But in his mind, what he's doing is probably also to restore control and order and things like that, like the client had alluded before, before Gideon fired him.
Yeah. Well, so this is where she says the line, like, I need it to rule Mandalore, which is me hearing her saying, like, I don't need to get this sword back for someone else to rule it. She needs to get the sword back so that she can rule the Mandalorian people. So I do think she's kind of picking up this mantle of leadership. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, she says, I'm changing, or she said, Mando says,
you're changing the terms of the deal.
This is the way.
Which is like, a very like clear affront in my opinion, because whenever Mando says this, it's about like, I'm doing this because this is connected to a deeper creed in my life. And the fact that she said that
so offhandedly.
Right. And Mando was saying it like, you're backstabbing me. You're not being honorable. And she's saying, this is the way. I think that's going to be a point that he's going to have to work out with Bo-Katan later.
Sort of a slap on the helmet, so to speak.
Yeah. So I think, you know, this is where she's at in her personal development. She is willing to do whatever she needs to get this done and become the leader of her Mandalorian people. And I think, like, you know, it's Mandalorian leaders in general were not humble people. That was like number 300 and the adjectives you use to describe Mandalore the Great. So, you know, she may literally the only Mandalorian leader who was ever humble, in my opinion, is her sister, Satine, when she was ruling as a pacifist. So, very, very interesting moment. So we cut back to the cockpit now that she's challenged them, told them what her plans are. You know, the captain is now on the phone, on the holophone, with Gideon.
With the boss.
Gideon comes up. Yeah. He's like, look, they've taken the ship, and Mando's like, Gideon is like, are these the same pirates that you've been dealing with? We kind of get the sense that they've been doing this a lot lately. And he says, yes, they've taken over the ship and only thing is left is the cockpit. You need to send backup. And Gideon, without saying it, is basically like, well, we're not going to come help you.
Nah.
There's nothing for us to do at this point.
You're good. And then like any evil villain, they have to do the, our way is more important. The needs, it's a very evil Spock, needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few kind of situation. And he concludes with long live the Empire.
Yeah.
And then Captain returns with the same.
Right, you know, you know what that means.
Yeah, he's gonna fire his officers.
Yeah, fire them. Fire his blaster at
quite,
his officers.
Quite literally.
Yeah, and at this point, Bo-Katan and Mando and crew are headed towards the cockpit to take it over. They meet pretty intense resistance right outside the cockpit, and they're really like pinned down because there's just a lot of heavy blaster fire. Mm-hmm. And eventually, to break that, Mando just runs out into the hall and he's taking several shots into his Beskar. I'm kind of surprised that he doesn't take a hit anywhere else, because it, you know, his Beskar covers a lot of the, at least his from his upper, like from his waist up, he's pretty well covered.
Yeah, I'm surprised no one ever goes perfectly. To the knees.
Yeah, his legs are fully exposed, as are a lot of his, like some of his forearm. But in any case, he gets down the hallway. He's activated some charges, throws them. They explode in the hallway, and they take out the remaining troopers. And they make it to the bridge. And this is kind of like a pretty dark scene here, right? Like they bust into the cockpit. They pull the guy off of the controls, realizing it, what preceded Mando running down the corridor is they had like an altimeter on their mm-hmm. band that was measuring how high the ship was, and it's dropping 11,000, 10,000, 8,000. Like you sense like we are rapidly heading towards the ground, like he's going to crash this ship. And so that Mando eventually breaks out to free them. They get in just in time. Sasha Banks steps into the cockpit or into the driver's seat, pulls back on the controls, and like they were like inches away from hitting the ocean. And there's a cool, like there's a boat on the water that they kind of like just barely miss.
As if it's not enough to show the ship so close to the water, they also have to show like a buoy or a boat yeah. or whatever it is not getting hit. Yeah. Just to let us know how close they were to biting it.
Well, I think that's good too. I mean, like sometimes the ocean can seem like it's hard to read the scale of it, because mm-hmm. it can have a little bit of a wave, but sometimes waves look larger, smaller. So it True. Was nice to get like a physical object on the water.
That's a good way. Yeah, it's a good explanation of showing that shot.
Yeah. And so they pull the captain back. She's like, look, where is the sword? And this is the first time we name check the Darksaber. So we've seen it in the previous season. We've talked about it earlier in this episode, but we've never mentioned the name. She finally says, where's the Darksaber? Does he have it? Obviously mm-hmm. referring to Bo-Katan. And he has this like epic line of
he's referring to Moff Gideon.
Right. What did I say? Did I say Greedkarga?
No, you said Bo-Katan.
Oh, yeah.
She's not talking about herself. Where am I?
Yeah.
Who am I?
Yeah.
Why is Gamora?
Okay. So she's like, does he have it? And he has this line. He's like, if you're asking, you already know. Which is pretty epic. And it's a good thing he had an epic line, because it's his last. He has this like electrocyanide capsule that he bites down on that shocks his brain and he dies. Which is like really dark and really intense. That, I mean, what I wonder is, how was he issued this thing? And like, what is the conversation like when you're like, all right, oh, and by the way, you know, here's your suicide device. You just keep that in the back of your mouth.
Don't worry about it. Just, you know, just in case you get
we'll let you know
captured or whatever.
It's not like Order 66 when it was unknown and it just happened. This is like, hey, you need to go do that thing now. it's pretty intense. So he does it before Bo-Katan can get any more information out of them. They realize that they've signaled the distress signal, so they don't have long. Mando's not going to go on a ride with them. He's going to stay back and go get the child. But before he does, Bo-Katan fulfills her word to him, and we get name-dropped Ahsoka Tano. And we knew it was happening, but we finally see it. It's incredible. She's like,
take the foundling to the city of Kaladin on the forest planet of Corvus. There you will find Ahsoka Tano. Tell her you were sent by Bo-Katan. And thank you.
Never heard of any of these planets or names. They're totally new. Although, in my opinion, I think we were told to go to Mon Calamari without finding out that we were going to Mon Calamari. So it's very possible the city of Kaladin in the forest of forest planet of Corvus, but maybe that's like around a planet that we already know, like it's around
like a nearby system that we're familiar with.
Yeah, it's like it's in the Alderaan system, just the moon didn't get blown up. But in any case, she's like, you can go to Ahsoka Tano, tell her that I sent you. and she thanks him, and then he does this like Iron Man move, which kind of feels like a Favreau.
That's definitely a Favreau reference.
Yeah, as you know, director of Iron Man series and the Avengers as well. Yeah, but so Mando is taking off
before he jumps off. They each part with their own "This is the way," and I think that sort of closes the agreement that they have, because the tone is definitely different. Before in the cargo hold, it was more like, "You're going to do this the way," and then right now that she realizes his courage and he's willing to do what it takes to help others, she sends him off more with a more passive "This is the way."
Yeah. Well, and there's, I think, a little nod here to the Battlestar Galactica series. They had the same kind of like sign-off phrase of "So say we all." And those of you who don't know, Katie Sackhoff played Starbuck in the Battlestar Galactica series. It's, I think, where her career exploded, at least in the sci-fi world. But the way that they say it to each other, it's in echo and response, the same way that "This is the way" is said. So it was, we put up a little meme of that on our Instagram page yesterday. But so Mando had to leave the ship quickly because he had to make it to daycare to pick up the child before they closed.
you would know that.
Yeah. It's a short scene, but Mando comes back to the frog's home. They are the frogs is, how do you say that? What's the plural? The frogs is,
I think would also
keeping up with the frogs is, he comes back, picks up the child. He thanks them for watching him. This tadpole has developed very quickly because in my reckoning, it hatched an hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like when Mando dropped him off before this whole attack happened.
I think he's almost as big as a bull.
Yeah, and it's like crawling out of the like it's not fully submerged anymore.
Chunky little
those,
thing.
For those who haven't done an elementary school amphibian diorama lately, it takes several days for that tadpole to develop. Although I guess if we're imagining that this tadpole has to develop into a humanoid frog, they'd probably have to move a little quicker. But he picks up the child. It's a really kind of cute moment between the two frogs. They obviously love each other. And then there's like this line that is obviously voiced. He says, "No, I have enough pets," like as if they like offered him a frog. And I can't tell if that was like the child saying, "Dad, can I get a dog?"
Yes.
Like "Dad, can I bring him home?
Can I take one with me?" Yeah, I think that's what I got that too.
Yeah, and he says, "No, I have enough pets," which is kind of, I can't tell if he's like, if it's as much a joke about him, the way he relates to the child being a pet more than a child, but that's funny. So they leave, and the outro of the show is a sequence with Mando picking up his ship, and he comes up to the docks and he's like,
"I gave you 1,000 credits. This was the best you could do."
His response is just deadpans it, like, "Sign here."
Just hands him the little holopad. This, I know we joked about Pelimoto being kind of like the mechanic in the Dane Cook stand-up comedy, but this guy is way more like that guy.
There's a unicorn. Like, there's a hole from a unicorn horn in here.
Yeah. It seems like he literally just filled it up with gas.
I swear I saw like pieces of plywood just sort of like nailed to the side of the ship.
Yeah.
There's like duct tape in between the seams.
It is rough. So Mando gets onto the ship. He sits down in the cockpit. The cockpit is full of like seaweed and other stuff from the ocean floor. I don't understand why though, because when it fell into the ocean, it was still like a, you know, the cockpit was the only part of the crest that was, you know, vacuum sealed, right?
Yeah.
So they should have been able to sit in the water, you know, just fine, because obviously no air was leaking in when they were in space.
I feel like it was the Moncala's way of the equivalent of duct taping to fix it kind of situation.
He just trashed up his car. Oh, he was using netting to like tie
it
up.
Yes. It looked like a combination between a 1980s taxi cab and like a fishing boat. He's got like the beads surrounding the seat. He's got rope and netting on top. It's like, this is what I get.
So this is where I thought this was a confirmation that we were on Mon Calamari, is the way he said, like kind of in disgust. He's like, ugh, Mon Calamari. I you think it was just a dig on their race?
Yeah, I think it's a dig on the race. More like these guys, like, this is, you can't get good help these days, kind of thing.
Okay. One of us is going to be wrong, so we'll see.
Not it. Totally you.
Mando takes off. It can fly, which is more than I thought was going to happen. I thought we were going to get stuck here for another episode.
Well, it barely.
Yeah, flying is a generous term here.
It goes up. It moves upward.
Yeah, and it's like jolting around, like Mando's like hopping up and down in his seat because it's not doing good. And then like, as he's taking off, there's like this squid kind of like rolls up. It crawls up the rope, moves over above the child, and like slowly lowers itself down on him. And like starts to like open its mouth to like bite him. And this kind of looked like the thing that ate the child earlier. With, mm-hmm. Like the
Yeah, you
the
think it's core. like a baby mama core.
Yeah.
I think so too.
Yeah. It's incredible how small they are compared to how big it was on the ship. But anyway, he's about to drop onto the child. Mando like no look reaches back. And
that's such like a dad grab. Like,
yeah.
Not even looking, just he knows it's there, just turns around and single-handedly grabs it.
There are like whole sets of like videos on social media of like dads have this natural ability to catch things before they hurt their children. Like kids on the edge of the couch and like they're about to fall and like the dad's in the chair and just flinches and catches them, or stuff like this where he catches the squid. But anyway, he grabs it, squeezes it, I guess probably kills it, and then hands mm-hmm. it to the child because, of course, he eats everything. And they're heading out to space, and Mando's like, I finally know where to take you, but you're going to have to hold on. It's going to be a bumpy ride. And I don't mean to like go back into my astrophysics nerd stuff again. I don't understand why this trip would be bumpy. Like, the space trip shouldn't be bumpy because bumps, like, unless he has thrusters that are just misfiring and the ship's just jolting around.
Maybe that would also why they have stabilizers on the ship for that reason.
I don't know if this is like a subtle hint that the next, like, at where they're going. Ooh, perhaps.
So it's like a foreshadow.
Kinda, yeah. Like, it's gonna be a bumpy ride, not because space is bumpy, but like, I mean, he's gonna have to get the crest fixed. Like, if he's going. He cannot fly this thing around in this condition for very long. So yeah. I know we've seen in the last scenes that we haven't already come across so far from the trailer involve Cara Dune and Greef Karga. So I don't know, maybe perhaps the first part of next week will be them reuniting on Nevarro to get the ship repaired, perhaps.
Possibly.
So in any case, I doubt we'll get to see Ahsoka Tano next week, if I had to say.
I still remain hopeful.
Yeah.
We'll see her soon. Yeah, I think you might be right. It may not be the next episode, but hopefully it is. That way they don't keep us waiting any longer.
So, and that's how it ends. Oh, actually, it ends with him blasting into hyperspace, and there's like a little tumbling access panel like that just fell off the ship before he went to hyperspace. That wasn't important.
That's like the license plate in Back to the Future.
Yeah, it does look like that.
Where it just like spins around and then falls.
I would love to know that his license plate says "Lost in Time."
I like it.
And that's how it ends. So, Chris, what did you think?
I really, really liked this episode. I am not disappointed anymore in the direction it's going. You know, thinking that the first two episodes of the season were just basically side quests.
Yeah.
But now we realize that they were just sort of a means to an end to get him to where he needed to be on this journey.
Yeah. You know,
the frogs were just a vehicle to get him to his destination. but the episode in itself was very hopeful of the future. Mm-hmm. Definitely had a different, more positive vibe compared to other episodes. I got this same feeling in the same episode, in the other episode that Bryce Dallas Howard directed, mm-hmm.
yeah.
of The Sanctuary, where kids are playing and the village is peaceful. So the fact that the, you know, baby, you know, frog mama and frog daddy were able to reunite, there's new life. I feel like it's a metaphor for new hope, for more yeah. hope in the galaxy. And that the Mandalorians and the conversation that he was having with Bo-Katan and crew about the Mandalorians possibly having a second wind and reuniting with Mando's yeah. assistance definitely feels like there's going to be a more positive future, at least for this part of the galaxy. So I definitely do anticipate that there's going to be more involvement on Mando's part
yeah.
in the future.
Yeah. I think Mando is beginning to learn more about the broader Mandalorian culture. And mm-hmm. as he's meeting more people, you know, he just got this big piece of information dropped on him that who he is part of a fringe group of the people he's claimed to be a part of. Mm-hmm. And so that is going to be intense for him to work out. And I think as he hopefully meets more and gets more involved, perhaps with Bo-Katan and her group, he will learn more and more about who he is and how he fits in with the Mandalorian people.
I agree. And on that note, I want to go back to what conversation that she had when they were at the inn and throughout the episode, because she kept saying that of the importance of the Darksaber and basically arming the Mandalorians and reuniting them for the purpose of to see a new Mandalore on the throne. Mm-hmm. And then I argue that she's not necessarily referring to herself. Maybe she's thinking she could do it, but they probably have a means of choosing who the actual Mandalore is. Mm. Which leads me to the reasoning. It's less of a theory. It's more of a possibility.
Yeah.
Is that Din Djarin is going to be Mandalore.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we know him to be, if anything, more strictly Mandalorian than Bo-Katan and probably broadly others in general. Mm-hmm. So,
but he has room to grow.
He has room to grow. But like, I think that there's a good case to make there for yeah. him being a qualified
leader.
You know, yeah, leader of the Mandalorian people. That would be interesting if this whole thing ends with, you know, some kind of battle against Moff Gideon where Bo-Katan is either killed or decides while watching Mando in combat that he's more worthy of leading the people than she is.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know. That would be cool.
Yeah, I would argue that the show is a clue. The name of the show, The Mandalorian, is more than just referring to him as a Mandalorian or, hey, that Mandalorian over there, but more like he is the Mandalorian.
Yeah, you're saying everyone's putting emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Exactly.
Exactly. It's not The Mandalorian, it's The Mandalorian. Well, we want to give some shout outs to those of you who are with us on Instagram. We put up a question about what your favorite parts were this week. We appreciate those of you who responded. Rhodes Photographs, Eprez, Skull Squared, That Nerdy Running Fit Mom, Peter Pan's Cottage, Papa Marquito, and Sammy Ryan. So thanks for interacting with us there. Keep an eye out on future questions and polls, and we'll be sure to name drop you in a future episode. We also want to plug what we started last week and we'll probably be continuing tonight at 8:00, the Death Watch Before After Show, where we are after this podcast, but before tomorrow's episode of The Mandalorian. And we kind of hear from you guys. You can talk to us in the chat about the show, this episode, or we'll talk a little bit about what we think might happen in tomorrow's episode of The Mandalorian.
So that's all for this episode. Thank you all for joining us.
If you like this episode, please subscribe, share, and write a review on Apple Podcasts. Reviews are the best way for others to find out about our show and help our show get more popularity in the rankings.
Also, follow us on Instagram if you aren't already. It's at Death Watch Podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at Death Watch Cast. And we're also part of the Magic Mail app. And as we mentioned before, if you have any comments, or want to mention any omissions or have suggestions for upcoming episodes, you can always email us at deathwatchpodcast@gmail.com. And as we've been doing, we'll feature it on future episodes. This is the way.